The committee will come to order. Seeing that we have a quorum present, may I please have a motion to approve the minutes of the January 20th?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative McFarland. Moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and the minutes of January 11th are hereby approved. Okay, the next item that we have a bill for consideration. It is House File 173. Representative Pepin, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
I would. I will move House File 173 be recommended to pass and referred to State Government Finance. And after that, I also have an amendment to address, an author's amendment.
Okay. Representative Pepin moves House File 173 recommended to pass. Welcome to the committee. Representative Pepin, would you please tell us about your bill?
Well, first, if we could, I would move the DE1 amendment.
Okay. Representative Pepin has an author's amendment labeled H0173DE1. Okay. Go ahead, Representative Pepin.
Thank you. The DE1 is a delete all amendment, and I do have one little change I'd like to incorporate into my DE1 amendment.
Okay, please proceed.
On page 3, line 3.3, I'd like to eliminate the semicolon and the word gifts in the period. Eliminate lines 3.8 through 3.13, ending with the word commission in the period, and then renumber accordingly. And perhaps if we could just vote on this amendment, and then I can walk through the bill after we do that, and just to get it in the shape I'd like.
Okay, is there any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is hereby adopted. Okay, Representative Pepin, would you please proceed with presenting your bill to the committee?
Thank you. Well, members, the last few years we've talked more than ever before about things like government innovation, reinvention, efficiency, and things like that. And you hear about it all the time in government, but I think the budget situation in the last couple of years has really reinvigorated our need to really consider how we deliver government services in the state. My concern that I have with how we deliver services is that I don't feel we have a mechanism in place to ensure that we're getting the innovation that we need and to ensure that we're getting the government efficiency and we're duplicating or getting rid of duplicative functions of government. And my feeling is that once we start agencies, boards, and commissions, they sort of take a life of their own, and there's really no mechanism in place to review those functions to make sure they're still doing what they were set out to do. And I won't pretend to be an expert on every agency, board, or commission that we have, but some of the questions that I have and that I think need to be explored further are why we have sometimes several different boards or agencies that look at the same types of things or perhaps have the same constituency. And I'll give you a couple of examples. The Department of Health and the Department of Human Services, for example, maybe there's a very good reason why they need to be separate. I'm not sure, but it seems like they have similar constituencies, and so it seems like there should be a mechanism in place to review those agencies to see if there's something that could possibly be done differently or there a way that we can sort of combine services. Another example would be DEED, DALI, and the Bureau of Mediation Services. All of these things deal with employment, labor, and industry. And then there's the DNR, PCA, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the Board of Environmental Quality, and the Forest Resources Council. And so my question is, do we need all of these as separate funded and staffed agencies? And maybe the answer to that is yes. But the problem is we don't know that that is the proper answer. And so over the last couple of years, we've been looking at this, and that is what has led me to introduce this bill, which I call the Minnesota Sunset Commission. And I actually stole the name off of the Texas Sunset Commission, which has been in place for a number of decades, and I'll talk about that again in a second. And I guess my main goals for this Minnesota Sunset Commission is to, number one, eliminate inefficiency, duplication, and waste. And I'll go through the bill in a second, but I want to just kind of give you the big picture overview. So the idea is the Sunset Commission will review the continued need for and the effectiveness of agencies, boards, and commissions and programs, look for potential duplication with other public services or programs, consider new and innovative changes to improve each agency's operations and activities, and propose the closure, consolidation, or continuation of an agency, board, commission, or program. Another goal would simply to reform government and reduce costs. Again, I think we need a mechanism to review and retire unnecessary or duplicative operations because, in my opinion, government has become too large and too expensive, and we need to find ways to look at that and see if we're serving our people the best way we can. And I think this is a good tool to rein in government services. And finally, the goal of the Sunset Commission would be to focus on core functions. The Sunset Commission will ensure agencies and programs do not outlive their needs. So perhaps there are some agencies or boards or commission that had a very strong purpose when they were created, but we don't know that because there's really no mechanism in place to see if they're still needed. So we need to be able to review these things and see if they've outlived their usefulness or not. So I will, I think, walk you through some highlights of the DE1 amendment, my house file now. And I won't go through everything because a lot of it speaks for itself, but I just want to highlight a little bit about the process that this commission would have. If you want to grab the amendment, the first couple sections are obvious. The third section, the membership, I'd like to point out, would consist of 12 members total. Four of those would be appointed by the governor, so whichever party's in control would have the opportunity to appoint four of the members. Two members would be appointed by the Speaker of the House, two members by the Minority Leader, two members appointed by the Senate Majority Leader, two members appointed by the Senate Minority Leader. And those appointing authorities would be directed to consider, they don't have to, they're not required to have some kind of exclusive background in this, but they would be asked to consider members with experience in business operations, mergers, finance, and technology. And that's just because of the complex nature of this commission, and that kind of background would help. This just the rest of that section just gives some probably uninteresting details that you can ask about if you want. But I'd like to direct your attention to Section 4 on page 3. The commission may employ an executive director to act as the executive head of the commission, and the commission is in the legislative branch. Upon request of the commission, the Legislative Coordinating Commission shall provide administrative support. So that's how the commission would start out. They would have the opportunity to hire an executive director, and you'll see at the end that I do have a small appropriation to get the commission off and running. Now, again, I did take this from the roughly from the Texas Sunset Commission, and they've been in force for a couple of decades, so they, you know, they have a bigger budget for this. But starting out, I think the best way to go is to start out fairly small. Going on to Section 6, this is kind of the process of how it would work. So before September 1st of the odd-numbered year before the year in which an agency is subject to sunset review, the agency commissioner will report to the commission, one, information regarding the application to the agency of the criteria, a priority-based budget, an inventory of all boards, commissions, and committees, and other entities related to the agency. The commission duties would be before January 1st of the year in which a state agency is subject to review and take action necessary to verify the reports, conduct a review of the agency based on the criteria provided, and prepare a written report. And then they would review the implementation of commission recommendations contained in the reports presented to the legislature during the preceding legislative session and the resulting legislation. Okay, moving down to Section 9, the commission report, by February 1st of each odd-numbered year, the commission shall present to the legislature and the governor a report on the agencies and advisory committees reviewed. It will present its findings, its recommendations, and other information as needed. The criteria they will use is highlighted in Section 10. And I'll just talk about a couple of them. The first couple, the efficiency and effectiveness with which the agency or the advisory committee operates, an identification of the mission, goals, and objectives intended for the agency and advisory committee. And then there are several other criteria listed, which I won't go through, the same type of idea. And then I want to touch on Section 11, the recommendations. In its report, the state agency will be required to, one, make recommendations on the abolition, continuation, or reorganization of each affected state agency and its advisory committee, and on the need for the performance of the functions of the agency and its advisory committees. Two, make recommendations on the consolidation, transfer, or reorganization of programs within the agencies. Three, make recommendations to improve the operations of the agency. That includes the estimated fiscal impact of the recommendation. And then I want to pay special note to line 6.7 to 6.9, and you can read that carefully because I think that's an important part of the process. The commission must work with the reviser of statutes and other legislative staff to prepare and submit draft legislation to the appropriate chairs and lead minority members of legislative committees to carry out the commission's recommendations. So that's where the legislature would then become involved. We would have to carry forth the recommendations of the agency or of the commission. Just a quick note on line 7.10. All money in a dedicated fund of an abolished state agency or advisory committee would be transferred to the general fund. So we'd be able to reinvest those savings elsewhere. And then the second to the last part I'd like to direct your attention to is the section 20 on page 9. Expiration and sunset review, and I want you to pay careful attention to the language on 9.10 and 9.11. It says, the following agencies expire on June 30th, 2013, and are subject to sunset review before June 30th, 2013. And then it sets forth a schedule of the agencies that would expire. So these agencies would expire unless we were to come back based on the recommendations of the commission to move forward with them. Now, in practicality, if the commission were to say that we don't need the Department of Human Services, it wouldn't really be very practical to say we're going to just abolish it, and because there's still these services that have to serve the people. So how it would happen in actuality was the commission would say, okay, we still need these services that are currently done in human services, so we recommend that they are now done in the Department of Health. And so that legislation that we put forward would be really important to make sure that we're carrying forth the work of the commission. But this, the thought that it expires would really require us to take action, and it would require us to make sure that these things are doing what they're supposed to be doing and that they haven't outlived their usefulness. And then just the last section, the appropriation, just asking for a small appropriation so that the commission could hire an executive director. Again, they would be working through the LCC in the legislative branch. The appropriation is for $100,000 for the fiscal year ending in June 30th, 2012, and then June 30th, 2013. And that's kind of it in a nutshell. And again, I just want to talk a little bit more about the Texas Sunset Commission. That's been in place for a couple of decades. It functions a little bit differently. I tried to structure this more how I can see it happening in Minnesota. Texas is a very different state than we have here and does things very differently. But I do want to point out that commission has been very successful. They have closed 58 agencies. They've consolidated 12 more, and they've saved taxpayers nearly $1 billion since its inception. And it has really turned into be a very well-respected commission. And talking to some people that have been involved with the commission, the reason they feel that it works is the process. It's a very clear process. The people that are on the commission, the staff people and the people involved in it, have really gained a reputation of no nonsense, of trying to look at these things in a bipartisan manner, and just really trying to put that all behind them and looking at things for their function, whether they're needed or not, whether they're doing the best that they can, whether it's a good value for the people of the state, and whether or not it's the most efficient way to do things. And so that's kind of the gist of the bill. And I think with that, I will be happy to take specific questions. I know it's got a lot of different sections, and the process It's got a lot of steps, but if any members have any questions, I'd be happy to take those now.
Okay, does anybody have any questions for Representative Pepin? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Pepin, for bringing this forward. I do agree with you that there's bipartisan potential for this. You know, we certainly last year in the legislature, or in the, maybe it was the biennium before that, we abolished DUER and transferred the duties to MMB. So there's precedent for that. But I have a few concerns about the bill as it's written. First, you know, I think in sections 10 and 11 you lay out criteria, which is a good thing. But it seems like you've almost led the commission to particular conclusions in section 20 because you name specific agencies. And my thought is, wouldn't you want to go through that process first that you outline in sections 10 and 11 before you sort of require in law that these agencies be sunset? And it seems like you're sort of taking aim at sort of specific kinds of agencies, ones that impact people of color and disabilities, and then in group three, kind of a lot of oriented towards labor, and then some environmental ones and ag in group five. So I'm kind of wondering, wouldn't you want to have the commission establish its criteria and, you know, debate the pros and cons and before you sort of almost lead them to a specific conclusion in Section 20? I'm interested in your thoughts about that.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Chair Representative Hornstein. That's an excellent question. And the reason I structured it that way is because I believe it brings forth the urgency, and I'm not targeting any particular agency. I think this encompasses all the agencies. And the idea is that every single thing we do in state government should be reviewed, in my opinion. Because, you know, I think all of these things serve a... This is just that the ones you pointed out, it's just that the commission wouldn't be able to do everything in 1 year. So they're going to have some kind of schedule of what, you know, sort of agencies they tackle each year. And it's just, we could talk about if the structure should be, you know, done in a different order or whatnot. That wasn't, you know, that was just, you know, it's just a different year. So it's not anything, I'm not trying to target any particular agency or anything like that. But my concern with doing it the other way is if I'm not trying to lead them to a conclusion, but if you do it the other way and you have them, you know, sort of review all these things, and, you know, my concern is that nothing would happen. They'd say, okay, well, this is what you should do. The legislature would get this recommendation from the commission, and then it would sort of allow us to be off the hook, frankly, because we wouldn't have to take action. The reason I specifically wanted the agency to expire is that forces us to be on the ball and look at things, and it doesn't allow us to just say, well, we'll look at that later, we'll wait till next year, we'll look at something else. This actually says, no, we're going to look at every single function of state government and make it on a regular basis justify that it's still meeting its mission and goals, it's still a good value, and it's still, frankly, being run as efficiently as possible, and the services aren't duplicative. And so I think we have to do it that way, because otherwise there's no mechanism for us to do the work, because if we did it the other way, there's nothing that would prevent us from doing that way now. It just isn't going to happen.
Representative Hornstein, a follow-up.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, quickly. I mean, but I think there is sort of a hierarchy because you have, you know, different agencies, you know, 2013 and then, you know, all the way to 2023. Does the Sunset Commission itself sunset in 2023?
No, I don't.
Representative Pepin?
No, I don't, and I figured I'd get a question on that because the Texas Sunset Commission, I think, was first put in operation in, I think it was 1978. No, it doesn't, because I believe that most of the activity would happen during their first kind of go around, and then after that, it would just be sort of a function to make sure things are still operating as proper, you know, as efficiently as they can. I don't have any particular attachment to the order. I mean, if you felt that the order of this was wrong, I would be amenable to switching the schedule. It's just that I think we have to be very careful that we wouldn't overload the commission with everything at once. And this was just kind of my opinion of things that could be looked at first. You know, the Department of Health and Human Rights, Department of Human Services. I just personally felt that those are those were a couple of the agencies where it seems like they have very similar constituencies, and maybe they would be a good place to start to find savings. If members felt that there was, a different group that would, should be moved up, I would certainly be amenable to those suggestions, because I feel that everything, every function that we have, every agency, commission, or board we have needs to prove itself. There's nothing that should just go on forever without having periodic review to make sure that it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. So I'm not trying to pick on any particular group.
Okay. Then one last quick question.
Go ahead, Representative Hornstein.
So then the other point is, I'm really interested in your thoughts on this too, particularly as the chair of this committee. It seems like we're creating another sort of government entity to sort of, examine government. And then you have some money set aside for this. And I'm wondering if there's a number one, is there a fiscal note? And then number two, why not have this committee do this work? It's a policy issue, clearly, and we have the GovOps committee in charge of that. So just a couple questions, the fiscal expense of this, and why not just have the legislature be involved as we were in the past when we got rid of the Doer agency?
Well, Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hornstein. The fiscal expense, I guess it depends on how you look at it. In my opinion, you can give an appropriation and say, we're directing you to get this done for X amount of money. Or you can say, how much is this going to cost you? And if you say, how much is this going to cost you, you're going to get a much bigger number than if you say, this is how much you get. It's kind of like when if I ask my daughter, how much do you need, she'll tell me, $50. If I say, you're going to get what you need for $15, she'll get it done for $15. And so I just feel like this is something where, I feel like $100,000, it was worked with staff to get a good estimation. I feel that that's enough to get the commission going, get the shell in place. And then the Texas Sunset Commission has a rather large staff. I think it's got something like 29 analysts. So this is something that could potentially grow. But to get it going, I think that we just start with a small appropriation, and this staff is directed to do that research and whatnot. And regarding it being another government entity, I kind of look at this as a commission to end useless, duplicative services and whatnot. And it's kind of a commission to end other commissions in a way. And it's an oversight. The reason I am not interested in having it in the legislature is because I sort of view it as the fox guarding the hen house. If we had the ability, to do those things, or the stomach to do those things, or the time to do those things, they would have happened already. And we could bring the thing. We could take committee time and have the Department of Health and Human Services come in and explain to us, why they're needed, and then we can make a vote. I personally don't think we have the time, and I personally don't think that we should all be the ones making those decisions. We have the power as the legislature to vote on the recommendations one way or the other. But I feel like if we had a completely separate entity that wasn't connected to the legislative process, didn't have attachments to people. The problem we have is we have friends that work in the Department of Health and Department of Human Services. Human nature says that we're going to want to instinctively protect people that we know personally. And I think that bringing it off campus, so to speak, gives it a level of transparency and kind of removes us from having to do these things that I think that we haven't done a very good job in the past at actually making things happen. So we'll hear Representative Banyan's bill in a little while, and his bill does have the legislators instead of I think his bill is 10 legislators on this commission, and so there certainly is that argument of if that's the better way to go, and that's a discussion that we should have. That's just personally not. I've I'll be honest. That's the Texas Sunset Commission. It does have legislators on it. I just personally feel that it would be very hard to separate ourselves and to find the time to do the work. And it just historically hasn't been done. There's nothing that prevents us from doing it, but I just can't see that that's going to happen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay. I'd like to interrupt testimony for just a moment here. Members, please join me in welcoming a group of 11th grade students from Community of Peace Academy in St. Paul. These students are participating in the Minnesota Historical Society's Voice of the People program. We'd like to welcome you to Government Operations and Elections and hope you enjoy your day and learn a lot. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative O'Driscoll, you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pepin, to Representative Hornstein's question, I think that some of the matters can be put to ease as I looked at this, that there's some logic in grouping of the different activities that are here. But if we see an efficiency in one area, for example, in your testimony you said the Department of Health and Department of Human Services, some like things, there may be some best practices that have been developed that may jump down to something else with perhaps public safety and corrections that may not be on the same year. Is there a mechanism in place to be able to move some of those forward or to apply those in a go-forward basis before their sunset year is up?
Representative Pepin?
I don't know that there's a mechanism in place so much as if all agencies and commissions and boards were on a schedule, then it would behoove them to find best practices, because they're going to have to come before the commission and say, you know, these are our priorities. This is our mission and goals, and this is how we've reached those mission and goals. So I don't know that an actual mechanism is necessarily necessary for this, because I think that they will all see that they have to, you know, they all have to meet the commission when their year comes up. And going forward, and I think, and personally, we have a lot of employees who do wonderful work for all these agencies. It's just that my concern is that if you work for one of the departments, you know perhaps what's going on in your area, maybe even what's going on throughout the whole agency, but you don't know what's going on in another agency or a licensing board. And how can any one person know without having some kind of oversight, you know, what all these different groups are doing? They may be as efficient as possible and, you know, have done everything humanly possible to save the taxpayers' money in this area, but if they're doing the same thing over here and they can't see it and we're duplicating services, we're not doing the citizens of the state any favors. So my hope is that it will reinvigorate all these different groups to be able to really, you know, do its best to meet its mission and goals and to move forward in the best way possible.
A follow-up, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I'm understanding, the legislation doesn't prohibit you from moving forward with the findings and recommendations if you see it applicable in another area. The cycle is just being established to be able to not take on the beast, if you will, all at one time.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pepin, I totally agree with the concept that you're going down here. I think review and oversight is important. Just wondering if there is something wrong with our current system, what you see is wrong with the way we are evaluating now. Do we have operations in place that are doing this type of thing? And, you know, if we do, if it's not working, can it be fixed? Other than doing a commission.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. You know, I think that there are some, good things that we do now. We have the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and I see that office would kind of fit hand in glove with this, because they would be able to help provide some of these services. Right now, what I've seen since I've been here is that the Office of the Legislative Auditor makes a lot of recommendations, and we get a lot of reports, but there's nothing really that requires us to do anything about it. And frankly, I've seen a lot of, people who've, maybe kind of breezed through it and said, oh, that's a shame, we shouldn't do it that way, and then promptly stick it on their shelf and do nothing about it. And I'm guilty of that myself, too, and the reason is because we have so many things that we have to do. And, I mean, if we spent all of our time looking at the audit reports, there's not enough hours in the day. So I'm not blaming any one legislator, or I'm not blaming the Office of the Legislative Auditor, because they do great work. It's just I don't feel that the mechanism's in place to be able to do much with the findings. And, and I guess you could make the argument that maybe that's the commission that, that we'd attach this to. But, again, that's a connected state agency, and so, which I don't like that part of it. So, I mean, could it happen in a different way? Perhaps. But this is, getting the ball moving, I guess, and if other people have better ideas as to, how we can get this done. I just don't see that we have the mechanism in place. I've never served on a committee where you go through all these different agencies and say, hey, Are you meeting its missions and goal? You know, your mission and goals. Is it still an effective agency? And so that's why I feel strongly that we really need to get the ball rolling and find a way to strategically do this and have a process in place, because otherwise we'll continue to get that great work from, I think there's something like 60 legislative auditors, and they have great findings, but a couple of the findings have come back and you've reviewed the same agency three times and, you know, maybe not so great results, but nothing seems to happen.
Okay, follow up. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Pepin, seeing as the legislative auditor is in here, perhaps at some point, either now or at your discretion, it would be interesting to hear his reactions to what you just said.
Representative Pepin, any comment?
It doesn't matter to me one way or the other.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Representative Scalzi.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Let's bring him down then, if it doesn't matter to Representative.
Okay. Mr. Nobles, welcome to the committee.
Thank
please
you, Chair.
State your name for the tape.
For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and I really appreciate Representative Pepin bringing forth some of these ideas, because this is definitely the business we're in of oversight and accountability and strengthening the operations of state government. And Representative Pepin and I have talked over the years about her frustration that action is not always taken by the legislature. But I would like you to understand that there is a lot of action that is taken by the agencies. Almost all of our recommendations from our financial audits and our evaluations are to the individual agencies. And commissioners take our reports very seriously. In fact, governors, going back to Arne Carlson and before then, have insisted that all the commissioners in state government report on their actions to implement our recommendations. And the implementation rate for our recommendations is extremely high, well exceeding 90-95% of the recommendations that we make to agencies. For example, we were recently asked to do an evaluation of the central office, the Chancellor's office of MNSCU. There's been a lot of concern about excess employment of people in that office. And so actually the Chancellor himself and the Board of Trustees of MNSCU asked the Legislative Audit Commission to authorize an evaluation of that office. We did that. We made the report to the legislature and to the Board of Trustees. The chair at the time, David Olson, took the report very seriously, told the Chancellor that he expected our recommendations to be implemented, and my understanding is that 43 people were relieved of their jobs as a result of the consolidation and increased efficiencies that have occurred in that office. That's one example. Admittedly, when we make recommendations to the legislature, sometimes we're dealing with very sensitive issues, and I could certainly enumerate to you times when you have fully implemented our recommendations. For example, you implemented all of our recommendations from our report on charter schools recently, but you have not implemented any of our recommendations on integration revenue. And I understand that, because it's a very, very difficult political job to do, because there are many interests at stake. You recently see media reports about our recommendation that you restructure the Metropolitan Council, because we do not think that the council has adequate accountability and credibility. Those are very strong words, and it's a very sensitive topic. But only you, as the legislature, can do that. Whether you will do it or not, only time will tell. But I am respectful of the fact that some of the recommendations that we present to you are difficult to implement. And I don't lament the fact, if you hear us out and you have the debate and decide that you either are not going to implement our recommendation on integration revenue or the Metro Council, or you take a different direction, you hold the election certificate. And you as a group have that responsibility, and you're accountable for those decisions. So would we like to have more impact through our reports and recommendations? Sure. But we are very respectful of the complexity and sensitivity of the issues that you deal with. Do we need other mechanisms to force you to take action? And I think that's what this bill is about. Possibly so. And that's what you consider in the approach of sunset. Let me just say one other quick thing, and not to take up too much time here. The approach that we have taken, and by the way, Representative Beard was recently elected chair of our Legislative Audit Commission. The approach we take is somewhat different than the sunset approach. And I think both approaches have strength. Both have weaknesses. The sunset approach is to set up a schedule and say, as Representative Pepin just did, every organization in state government is going to be subject to review on a schedule. And that, again, sort of forces you to do it. The alternative, which we have developed through the Legislative Audit Commission, which is a bipartisan commission, as I think you know, with equal representation of both parties in the House and Senate, is that we've established a process that says to all of you as members of the legislature, what do you think is the most important thing for us to look at now? Not on a schedule, not one that was established 3 or 4 years ago, but given circumstances now, is it MNSCU? Is it the Department of Health? Is it integration revenue? Is it the sex offender treatment program? That's how we get to the topics. And we try to deliver to you then a piece of state government that you have identified as being important, either an agency or program. And we try to go in as much depth as possible. Rather than taking a broad examination, we try to go in depth. Admittedly, that has limitations. We can't cover a lot of issues, departments, agencies, boards, and commissions. This approach would take a much broader view and create a mechanism that would require action. I think those are the main differences. But as Representative Pepin said, if this were established, I would certainly hope, given the limitations on the resources for this Sunset Commission, that we would be able to provide them with some of the in-depth examinations that we do of some of these agencies, and maybe they can take that into consideration as they make recommendations to you as to whether or not those programs or agencies should continue or not.
Okay. I'd like to thank Mr. Nobles for sharing with our committee. We appreciate that. Also, it looks like we had another group of students show up, 11th graders from Community Peace Academy in St. Paul. Welcome to Government Ops. We're glad to have you here today, and hope you're learning a lot and enjoying your day. Thank you. Okay, Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh,
can I just comment
me.
On? Sorry.
Representative Pepin?
I just wanted to comment on Mr. Noble's testimony, and I think he did a pretty good job of laying that out. And I think that they do fantastic work, and I'm envisioning them continuing to do that work and then just directing it more towards the commission. And, you know, as he said, the agencies and groups have taken a lot of the change. The recommended changes, and we have at times too. But again, it is a discussion of whether we want to, you know, force the issue, if you will. And in my opinion, we do need to do that. Otherwise, we're, you know, I mean, it's okay to, you know, kind of have this idea of we'll just pick whatever's, you know, hot this year or whatever. But I think we need to look at it in more of a schedule, and I think we need to have a more definitive responsibility as to whether the programs stay or go. And also, even if you are looking at something, you're still, the problem now, in my opinion, is you can still make recommendations within these agencies, but there's not an agency that's going to close itself. So, you know, even though you're working within these bubbles, I still think there needs to be something overlooking kind of the big picture idea. And I think that this will work very well with the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and it will just, you know, require us to look more at what they do as opposed to make it, you know, optional.
Okay, thank you. We'll try this again. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Representative Pepin, I this is really interesting, and I've had such a good time looking at this bill. The only, and it's really a nice gesture to be able to hear from the legislative auditor related to this bill, because I think there's a great comfort level when we hear his words about what might happen and what could happen that would be better for the state of Minnesota. And when I hear people say things like the beast, you know, government does protect us from a lot of ills. And so government is us, and it's good. And I think we got to watch those kinds of words. But I'm wondering if any of this runs afoul of the Constitution, and I can't find anything in there about abolishing agencies being a problem. So, number one, I'm just wondering if you've looked at that to see if it runs afoul of any of the clauses in the Constitution. And also, are there any other states besides Texas? Because, like you say, we're very different from Texas. And when I look at school test scores across the nation, I always say we don't necessarily need to be like Texas. So I'm wondering if any other states have tried this and to what success.
Representative Pippen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Scalzi. The constitutionality issue, there were some, I did have some concerns, and we did work through some of that, and perhaps, I don't believe there are any constitutional issues anymore, because Mr. Shepherd has been kind enough to work with me on that, and perhaps that would be a question that he could answer as well for assurances for everyone.
Mr. Shepherd, did you have a comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, Representative Scalzi, I do think this structure is constitutional because the legislature is not delegating to a commission the decision as to whether a group expires or not. The legislature is providing that the group does expire, and it would expire unless another law would pass. The commission is advisory, and so I don't think there's a constitutional issue with that. I think that is okay in a way that there would be an issue if the commission were making legal decisions about the existence of a group.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. Representative Pepin.
Thank you. Regarding your other question about what other states are doing, you know, I've done some research and some other states are looking at things differently, but I think that the Texas Sunshine Commission has done the most with it, and I think the other issue is that, like us, in past years, other legislatures were more flush with money than they are now, including us. A couple years ago, we had a surplus, and so when there's a surplus, these types of things, you know, reviewing agencies and functions take a back seat, because if we have more money than is in our budget, or if we have an excess of money in our budget, the impetus really isn't there for change. But Minnesota now, along with many other states who are in the same situation, I think has to really look at things differently. And, you know, where other states are right now, I'm not sure. I think there's a lot of them that are, you know, tossing around different ideas. But, you know, this isn't, I really am talking about starving the beast. You know, my goal isn't to do that, because I think that you're right, that our state employees are, I mean, wonderful. We have great work ethic and whatnot. It's just that, just because an individual employee is doing a great job, it doesn't help. It's not responsible to the state of Minnesota if we have an individual over here who's doing a great job, and then we have an individual over here in a different department that basically has the same exact function. You know, I'm not sure that that's what the state is expecting from us. So I feel like we owe it to the people to really look at all the functions that we have and just to be sure we're efficient. And this isn't meant to be any attack on any, you know, personal employee or agency or, you know, or anything, because we're all kind of a product of our environment and where we are. It's just an attempt to look at things from the big picture and say, okay, well, we've got all these different things. Is there any way we can kind of group them together and maybe, you know, deal with some of the overlapping functions?
Okay, we have another rather complex bill that we're going to be hearing today, so I would ask that the remaining member questions please be as brief as possible so we can move along here. Representative Plum.
Thank you for that that intro, Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin. And it might be easier as a freshman to, you know, since I don't have any investment in business as usual, to be able to appreciate that we're looking at the positives and negatives in other states to try and learn to do better. And I applaud the intent of this bill to take something that has worked somewhere else and try and make Minnesota better by employing those practices. I honestly do think that the order is in Section 20 is good in the fact that HHS is the largest, fastest growing portion of government, Group two has education, which is, you know, presently the largest component of government and budget-wise. So that if we're going to get the bang for the buck in efficiency, I think that we need to keep at least the first two, three of these in the order they are, in order to help set us up for better footing in the future. And is there something that you saw, Representative Pepin, in Texas's system? You know, what were the strengths and weaknesses, and how did you augment that, you know, when you're looking at how to take it from Minnesota? Because we are slightly different than Texas. A little cooler, I think. Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Quam. We really started out with the Texas Sunset Commission, and I think probably the biggest way they're different, of course, is that they have a rather large staff now, and they have legislative members, which I think we'll hear more about that kind of idea from Representative Banyan. And I mean, the argument can be made that you get legislative buy-off by doing it that way, because you have them, you know, taking an active role in it. I think that's an okay process. I happen to like this way a little bit better. So I think a lot of the things we have here are very similar to what we looked at and what they did and what they've done in Texas. But keep in mind, this has been, you know, since 1978, and so really most of the activity in Texas happened in the first couple of years. And that's why I think that if we were to implement something like that, we would have a lot of a bang for our buck early on, and then it would serve more of a, you know, making sure we're kind of keeping the efficiencies in place. And so I'm not sure if that quite answers your question or not, but you know, I guess I kind of took what I think that they've learned and kind of structured it similar, but not exactly the same.
Okay, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Chair Pepin. A lot of the stuff that you're talking about here, I think, is laudable. I don't disagree with that. We need to look at what we provide as services and how we provide them, and we should be reviewing that constantly. We need to make sure that we're spending taxpayer dollars in the most efficient manner possible. So I agree with that part of it. But I do have some concerns here, and one is the order that they're doing these at. Yes, Health and Human Services is probably our largest department and most complex, and I guess to start that out with a brand new commission to look at that when they don't have their feet on the ground, I have some concerns about that, because, you know, maybe we want to have them take a swipe at some of the ones that don't have as much effect on other people's lives throughout the state of Minnesota as that one does, while they're learning the process. As we all know, this year with all the new members we have, it seems like that we're taking off or a little slower than we have in the past, because people just are trying to learn what they're doing. So that's a concern I have with that part of it. And again, that's just the order that it's in. I mean, and I know we have to do them. If we're going to do this, we need to do all the departments. It's just taking off on the most complex one on the first bite, when you don't know what you're doing as the commission, raised some concerns with me. The other part of this has to do with when you're talking about the reviser statutes, and they will give them to the legislature, submit the legislation to us, and it's like we have to react on it that somebody else is bringing to us without a lot of input into this, which goes to the makeup of the commission itself. I think I would lean more to having some legislative, like the Legislative Audit Commission, where you have legislators on there looking at this, because that's the job we have. Like the legislative auditor, Mr. Noble, said, we have the certificates. This is what we were ran for. This is what we were elected to do, is to make these decisions. And for us to take our election certificates and hand our responsibilities off to somebody else, I think is not the right way we should be doing this. We should be doing the jobs that we were elected or hired to do. So, and, you know, the thing is that there are hot issues that they come up. Is that those things come up. Again, that's what we were elected to do here. So I guess those are the concerns I have, and I don't know if there's a question in there, but because this is just looking at this, there's some concerns I have going forward with this. The idea, the concept behind it, I'm not totally against. It's just the way this is structured right now, I'm not sure I totally agree with it.
Representative Pepin, did you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I just have a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. I appreciate your thoughts, and you know, hopefully going forward we can continue to work on this. I think one of the things for me in your comment about it's our job to get this done, and I appreciate that. That is true. It is our job to get it done. I think one of my concerns, too, is the partisanship that can tend to ensue when people who are elected tend to, and it's not, you know, it's not one person, it's everybody. I worry that we tend to kind of, you know, we have our kind of fiefdoms we like to look at or protect, or that, you know, that we might favor, and I don't want that to happen. I want it to be something, I want it to be a group of people that are, you know, kind of not inside the fishbowl, that don't have those partisan concerns as much as that as could happen when you have it made up of legislators. So that's my kind of reason for moving it this way. But again, we will have Representative Banyan's bill to consider, because I think his is more in that direction. So that is something that's debatable.
Representative Nelson, just a quick follow-up.
Just a quick follow-up, and one more thought that I had that I forgot to do is one other thing that legislative auditor Nobles said, and when he was discussing the Met Council, is that stuck in my mind as he was up there speaking, and before that, was in the ideal world, if we could look at a blank slate and changing everything, we could do that. And when we talked about the Met Council, there's probably better ways to do it, but some of these things progress and become the way they become because of laws that are from outside that. And so it's like, if we're looking at this now and say, okay, with the commission coming in and looking at everything that's being done, without us being involved in it, we're the ones that are going to make those decisions. And if we could have great effect on, again, on other people's lives, the way our cities and the way our counties and operate because of what decisions we make here. So these are the concerns I have.
Representative Pepin, any comment? Okay. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll keep this short. I, too, have a concern about the makeup of the board and the terms, and I think what I'm going to do is offer to help work with that. I think there is an issue about the learning process, the learning curve for members, and maybe we could look at maybe some staggered terms or something so there's some continuity on that. So I'm just offering my support.
Okay. Thank you, Representative McFarland. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. Representative Scalzi, my comments, if you remember, were not directed at toward the state government. It was directed at items 1 through 6 in the groupings and how we would go about that, and the reference was to the beast, if you will. How do you tackle that, not state government as being the beast? So I just want to clarify if there was any misconceptions on my comments on your part or others on the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Are there any? Is there any further discussion on this bill as amended? Anyone from the public have any comments? Okay. Seeing none, Representative Pepin renews her motion that House File 173 be recommended to pass as amended. Those in favor of the motion and be referred to State Government Finance. Those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does prevail. House File is recommended to pass as amended. Representative Banyan. Representative Banyan is here today to present House File 2 on budget-based priority process. Representative Quam moves that HF 2 be recommended to pass and passed along to House Government Finance. State Government Finance, excuse me.
So moved.
Okay, thank you. Representative Banyan, would you please tell us about your bill?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I first need to, I believe, to make sure I've got my procedures right, need to move an amendment that should be in the possession of everyone marked H0002DE1. And I would like to amend this amendment just on one word. if the membership would look at 6.34, page 6, line 34, please change the last word party to chamber. I apologize, I just simply missed it in the proofread, and would like to incorporate that one word change into this amendment. And I ask for your consideration to move this as the author's amendment.
Okay, the chair will move that amendment be offered and incorporated into HF2. Okay. All in favor of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Amendment is hereby incorporated into the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. If I may I proceed? Mr. Chairman, may I proceed?
Please proceed.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, and thank you for an opportunity to talk about this very important bill. This is a priority of mine. In fact, it's the first priority of mine, and I'm happy to have the opportunity to present it before you today. This bill has three portions to it, incorporated in two articles. You've just heard Representative Pepin's bill on a sunset commission. I'll keep my comments on that brief. I think a number of the questions you've asked today on her bill will also be reflected in this bill as well. And I'll defer those to the end. I'd like to talk about the first two provisions of this. First of all, that it provides for a process that alternatively could be called priority-based budgeting, zero-based budgeting. I would probably use the less glamorous phrase modified zero-based budgeting than any of the above, but MZBB is not a very sexy name. So we'll pick one or the other. Secondly, passing a provision like this and going to something like a zero-based budgeting process will require us to think differently about how we do forecasts of expenditures going forward. And I want to review that with you because the very first part of the bill talks about forecasts. I want to make sure you understand that. And then lastly, the Sunset Review Panel creates a means of updating agencies and encouraging efficiencies. Let me talk for a few minutes about the zero-based budgeting process and talk about how what I'm trying to do in this particular case is to do something that's more bottom-up than top-down, and the fact that I think what needs to happen here is find a way to get good information from the agencies and from mid-level managers on up through the process. And the way I talk about this budgeting process is a process of gathering information, moving it upstream, rather than taking somebody deciding how to spend 30-some billion dollars and working it downstream. This is an activity-based budgeting process. It focuses on a decision package. Okay, the decision package will include such things as a name or title, a function and description. It includes identifying the legal basis for performing the activity. Then it asks in Article 1 for three levels of the activity. One might consider it to be, one might go about that in a way that would first have the minimum amount that would be needed to meet statute, what the current level is, and then what a desired level is. So it asks for three different levels of funding. And it asks basically people to think in terms of increments, and this relates to my career in economics. We tend to think in terms of margins and operating on margins and making changes therein. And so providing three different levels of activity is a way by which we can do that, by asking people to think about what would it mean to provide this service to 100 more clients or customers. What would it mean to reduce the level of service in this other area, this activity, by 10%? Who would be impacted, and how would they be impacted? So it asks them to do that. And then the last part of the zero-based or priority-based part of this bill asks for a measure of cost effectiveness and really ask each agency and each department to compare themselves to other states to tell us how are we doing, so that when you look at a budget, you actually are getting a thermometer, a reading on how things are going. So decision package and the way these get built is from the bottom up. Each agency would create a decision package for some activity, some level of output, some output that they create, and they would provide you with a name or a title. They would provide you with the levels of output, then describe the various materials, the labor, and the overheads that would go into providing that service or activity. It would identify a capital budget and then provide that for each of three different activities. Again, I want to make sure I've emphasized this. Packages move from the bottom up rather than top down. And one of the concerns I know that many people have about doing priority or zero-based budgeting is that it's really expensive, it's costly. We're going to engage a large number of individuals in this process and have them work pieces up the ladder, again, rather than down the ladder. So higher-level managers would be able to see what the lower-level managers thought was the right level of service to provide, and they would have that information, and they obviously have the ability to override that decision. That's what happens when you're a higher-level manager. But you would have the ability to see the entire set of processes as they come up, and that information would be available to you as well as to the administration, which eventually has to make its own decisions about what level of each activity they wish to finance and what the overall budget would look like. The advantages to me of zero-based budgeting are that they're activity and service-based. They focus on the resources needed to deliver an activity or service to clients, and they allow one to see efficiencies. And it really should be more user-friendly to both administration and to the legislature. I've spent time already looking at a lot of different spreadsheets for how our budget works here, and I can't say I would characterize them as terribly user-friendly. And I think we could do better, and honestly, we ought to do better in terms of being able to provide people with information. How much are we spending on an activity rather than how much are we spending on an agency? I think that language helps out better. Other advantages are that it's adaptive. It's very flexible to move to different areas at different stages. I think it provides you with better resource allocation. And again, I can't emphasize enough the bottom up. It engages managers with better and more local information. That's something that's really appealing to me, because a lot of time the information about what's working best isn't somebody who sits in St. Paul, but someone that sits out in St. Cloud. Or in Moorhead or some other place. That's the place where I would like that. I think you could get that information. There are disadvantages. I'd recognize them and like to tell you how we're trying to deal with them. The most common critique of zero-based budgeting is that it's costly to implement. I'm not going to hide from that. I want to recognize it. But at the same time, I'd like to be able to say that one way we've dealt with it is to phase it in over two biennia. So a group moves first, half the budget moves first and half in the first biennium, and another part of the budget goes through in the second biennium, and you would continue to use the process you currently have when you're not in that area. We would allow the administration and the governor to make the decision about which half of the budget moves first to try to provide them with some flexibility in determining that. Secondly, this is something that I think about a lot in my other professional life, is finding good performance measures. And so this is why we're suggesting comparisons to other states and making those comparisons that I think work. It encourages agencies to seek out best practices. And the uncertainty about other options, they don't know which three levels to offer to you. That sometimes is a critique I hear. And encouraging the three options and encouraging the current service level to be one of those three options at least reduces the amount of information, the amount of options that they need to face. Let me turn to the second issue quickly, which is actually addressed in the beginning part of your bill. The language about forecasting here currently allows for a forecasted base level of all spending. if you go to, if you adopt this bill and it's passed into law, you will not have a level above zero for some level of services at any, for some level, some agencies, excuse me, or some departments at any time. It therefore makes sense, it makes no sense for us to ask MMB to provide us with a forecast for numbers which are assumed to be zero. And so it makes more sense in my mind to keep MMB mute on future expenditures. They could continue to do a revenue forecast. They can continue to do a current year forecast of expenditures. But doing a future year forecast of expenditures philosophically becomes extremely difficult for them under the program. And so this simply removes that responsibility from them and says you don't need to provide that. You've just spent a good bit of time talking about sunset review, and I don't want to take up too much more of your time. We have questions and about 40 minutes, I think, to get through here. So let me just briefly highlight how I see it working. As Chair Pepin told you, there are some differences between these two bills. The bill envisions a 12-member commission, six appointed by the House, six from the Senate. Five of them would be legislators, and one from each chamber. One of them would be a public member chosen by the rules of the Senate or by the Speaker of the House, depending on which side you were on. And no more than three of five could be from the majority party. So we would keep it as close to even as we can, but recognizing the majority would at any time have responsibility for bringing the Sunset Commission's recommendations forward. I think an advantage of having this done as a legislative commission is that those legislators who vote for the Sunset Commission report then have the responsibility to bring that commission report here to ask you to confirm it, to decide who will move forward and who will not move forward as an agency or as a department. I think that's important. They have two-year terms. They're staffed by the Legislative Coordinating Commission, okay, so that they are separate from the legislative auditor. I know the previous version of this bill had the legislative auditor connected to it. On reflection, decided that was probably not a proper role for the Office of the Legislative Auditor and have taken that away. We place all agencies on schedule. I heard a lot of discussion during the discussion of Representative Pepin's bill over that ordering. Like her, I think I heard her correctly, and I will agree with her. I have no reason not to look at that ordering and make changes as people decide they would like to have some other places go first, perhaps places that might be a little easier to digest as you get your training wheels removed from the process. Hearings would be held in the fall and winter of odd-numbered years. You'd report on February 1st of even-numbered years back to this body. The choices are to continue to abolish or to reorganize, and it creates legislation to continue or reorganize the agency so decided. And like, if I understood Representative Pepin correctly, like her bill, this bill has the default that an agency does sunset on date certain unless the legislature acts to continue it. I think about behavioral economics and types of topics such as in the book Nudge by Cass Sunstein and Richard Thaler, having the option being to sunset is better than having the default option being to continue unless one acts. Just very briefly, because I don't know that you covered that. I was thinking about what kinds of questions would the Sunset Commission ask. Let me give you a couple ideas. These come from the Texas Commission's report. If you covered this, I'll skip it. But, okay, is the agency operated efficiently and effectively? How successful has the agency been in achieving its mission's goals and objectives? Excuse me. Does the agency perform any duties that are not statutorily authorized? If so, what is the authority for those activities, and are they necessary? In what ways could the agency's functions operations be less burdensome or restrictive and still adequately protect and serve the public? Would abolishing the agency cause federal government intervention or loss of federal funds? He would have to ask that question, and that would be something that's important. I think the advantages are that it updates government, it provides certainty on continuation of agencies. The provision is that you continue for a 12-year term within this. I would point out, and Chair Pepin did this as well, that the Texas Sunset Advisory Commission, operating since 1977, has abolished 58 agencies as the end of 2009. It's consolidated another 12, so it has been effective in finding places where duplication and obsolescence has happened. And for those reasons, I really think that this is a place where I feel we were led to go. I thank you for the opportunity, and I now would like to receive questions from you as you consider the bill.
Thank you, Representative Banyan. Representative Nelson, you had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Banyan, I guess as I was listening to you talk about the zero-based budgeting and the forecast, removing the forecast of ongoing spending, I guess I got some questions. How would that work? I mean, we have some departments that we just can't get rid of. So we have to assume they're going to go on. The one I'm thinking of the top of my head is prisons. We have prisoners in jail, and they've got to be guarded, and there's going to be costs there. And to say, well, at the end of the biennium, that's going to go away seems a little disingenuous to me. And to say we're not going to forecast out, well, these are things that we have to do. And eliminating that when we're looking at, okay, we got revenue coming in and we don't know what our ongoing expenses are. I guess that's, how do you envision that working?
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Representative Nelson and members, I believe that if you're going to put out a budget forecast for the upcoming biennium, for the out year or the tails, if you wish, I think the problem there is that you simply don't have a base to work from. Saying that there is a forecasted base, if you do have something that's a modified zero-based program, at least for some expenditures, the number zero, you certainly wouldn't want someone to say that expenditure was zero. I agree with you that we're going to have prisons and they're going to have some expenditures, but we won't really know what that level of expenditure is. And so I think it's unwise for us to continue the practice of having a forecasted base if you adopt a program such as zero-based or priority-based forecasting, because you don't have any good estimate of what your expenditures are. You will know what your revenues are. You will know that, or you'll have a forecast. You don't know, but you have a forecast of what revenues are. And you will build your budget on the basis of that forecast. And if you decide, based on the priorities that you see, that you don't have enough revenues to meet all of those that you have, this does not tie your hands from deciding, well, I need to raise revenues by some other means. That conversation is not precluded by what we're talking about here.
Representative Nelson, a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess as you did what your last statement there, I don't see that as any different than what we do, how we do it now. I mean, yeah, we have, this is our forecasted what we're going to spend, but when we're in the legislature and we have then the budget forecast or the revenue forecast comes out, we have to make those determinations and make those cuts all the time. I mean, in my 8 years in the legislature, every year we've had to look at, this is what we forecast we were going to spend, and this is what the revenue was coming in at, and we've had to make cuts every year since I've been here. So that doesn't sound to me like it's all that different from what we're doing now. So it's maybe illuminated to me so I can see how it's different.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Representative Nelson and members, I think that I agree that you've had to face that process of having to do those cuts for the last few years, and we'll have to do more. But the issue is that currently we talk as if spending is going to happen, that spending is on an autopilot. So that if we don't change current law and we extend into the upcoming biennium without passing something, that somehow a different level of spending will occur.
That's not what would happen under the under this. We would expect instead that spending would be determined in light of what the revenues are that are coming in. Those are still going to be forecasted in any revenue bills that are presented before the legislature to add or subtract from them.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Banyan. First of all, I apologize that someone must have been remiss in not telling you that when a freshman presents his first bill, there's supposed to be treats.
Oh.
But
Representative Erdahl, I am so sorry. I completely forgot protocol. I will take responsibility for that. I won't let it happen again.
Over there, keep that in mind. My question. Madam Chair, Representative Banyan, just comparing, and I commend Chair Pepin and Representative Banyan for bringing forth this sunset provisions. I think that's important, as I've said before. But I just noticed a slight, maybe just semantic difference. I just want to make sure on the sunset portions. I'm looking at page 9 of Representative Pepin's bill and number page 13 of your bill, Representative Banyan. In Representative Pepin's bill, the following agencies expire on June 30th, 2013, and are subject to sunset review before June 30th, 2013. And in your bill, Representative Banyan, the following agencies are sunset and expire on June 30th, 2014. So the word review, I mean, is that, do these mean the same thing?
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Representative Erdahl, yes, I believe they do. I certainly intend them to be the same. I don't think we have any difference in our intentions between the two bills, and if the word review needs to be put in to make that clear, I'm happy to accept that.
Okay. Follow up, please.
Yes, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that might be a good idea to clarify that. But okay. The second question that I have, and mentioned this to you, I think maybe another committee or privately, just to give you a specific example and make sure that I understand on the zero-based budgeting, let's say that there was a bill that in the past has had tails. For example, investment tax credit for dairy.
Representative Erdahl, could you try to get to the point? We do need to be out of here by noon. So if you could rest your question, that would be fabulous.
That was the point right there. Would that bill, would my cows have tails?
Representative Banyan.
Madam Chairwoman, Representative Erdahl, this relates to expenditure bills, so a tax credit is actually going to get treated differently than an expenditure. So I'm not exactly clear on this. My impression is, in fact, a tax bill does have implications. So we'll have implications for revenue in the next biennium, and those would in fact be reflected in the revenue forecast, which would continue under the bill. If you were actually spending actual dollars on your dairy, those would be in the first biennium, subject to the zero-based budgeting, and then would be under an expedited, basically continuing the current practice in the following biennium. So your dairy has 4 years.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, so a grant, for example, would not
correct
have tails, but a tax credit may.
Representative Banyan.
Madam Chairwoman, Representative Erdahl, I believe that's correct.
Okay. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you may have just, I'm sorry, Representative Banyan.
Sure.
Thank you for bringing this topic up. I think it's really interesting. I think you might have just addressed my question, but I wondered, how does zero-based budgeting address a long-term investment like a public health program that addresses obesity, for example? Are we then going to be reviewing that every 2 years to decide if we still want to spend that money? And how does it not just become bogged down in review and re-review?
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Representative Green. First of all, it'd be reviewed under the zero-based principals every 4 years, not every 2 years. So that you would be, but every 4 years, I think it's wise for us to go back and say, are we providing the right service? Are we providing it at the right level? Has there been a change in the costs of delivery of the service that might cause us to change how we are appropriating that particular item? Okay, and again, this is not an attempt to try to hold people down. We don't want to throw sand in the gears. I think 4 years and doing it every other biennium gives us what we need. But I'm sure in conversation as we move forward with this bill with folks in fiscal research who might want to tell me how much this process costs, we might want to go back and readdress that. We might be looking at some other modification, but this is not a pure, I want to be clear on this, it's not a pure zero-based budgeting, which would be everything from ground zero, every biennium. This is not what this bill does.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Banyan, thank you for the bill. I appreciate it. I think thinking about things like this is very important, especially at a time like this, so I do thank you. Just a couple of thoughts I had, really concerns. I just wanted to get your reaction. One is kind of a public relations issue in the sense that if there's really no projected base going forward, does that mean that we're losing a focus out in the public in terms of our responsibilities? I mean, right now, if we took in $30 billion for the biennium and the projected base is 36, we say we have a $6 billion shortfall.
Correct.
That wouldn't happen anymore. There would be no projected base, so we would just say, I don't know what we'd say. I don't know how we would draw attention to some of the challenges we have if there's no projected base anymore. And might it not kind of lull us all into a false sense of security that way? I mean, one advantage of the headlines we're seeing is that people are focused on these issues, both at the state and federal level. Any thought about that?
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Chairman Pippen and Representative Simon, members. Yeah, I've thought about that a lot, in fact. I didn't have this provision put in without really thinking about what does it mean, because you're right. You do kind of lose being able to say there's a $6 billion deficit. What you'll get instead, I think, is a different set of information from various agencies. We need $100 million more to do this thing that we think really needs to be done to deliver this service to this group of individuals. We're able to release $75 million over here. Hey, look at us. We're able to save some money. I think it changes the language by which we talk about the budget and talking about, you know, what are the things we can do with the resources we have. And as agencies come forward and say, to provide the service we have, it's become more costly. We haven't found a good way to deliver it cheaper. We can get that conversation, and I think then you attach, if you're thinking about raising additional revenues, you attach it to a specific service or agency that you say needs to grow, rather than just saying I need to raise X billion dollars and it's going to go to the budget, which frankly doesn't provide a lot of information to people and make informed decisions about where their spending is going.
Representative Simon, a follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one quick follow-up on a different issue. I just want to talk for a minute about us and the legislature. And this is probably a good time to have the discussion because we're in a transition for gubernatorial administrations. And so we can kind of think about legislative oversight in a different way. We've had a Republican governor for 8 years. Now we have a DFL governor. So that shakes things up a little bit. I guess one concern I have about putting this in statute rather than relying on either us or the executive branch to reevaluate agencies that may be performing poorly or otherwise have outlived their mission. I just have a question and maybe a concern about our time here. You know, usually the reason we have Mr. Nobles and the Legislative Auditor's Office is we don't always have the time here to do oversight. We're kind of a bill factory. We're here for 3.5 to 4.5 months a year. We process bills mostly. Sure, at the beginning we have overviews, but we're not typically as a legislature that good at day-to-day, month-to-month oversight, and part of that's because we're not here all year round, and I think that's a good thing. I don't want us to become a full-time legislature, but what is the role then of the legislature, and is there a danger, and I'll say this even though there's now a Democratic governor, because I think oversight is important no matter who it is there a danger that we as a legislature aren't engaged in the oversight process? We don't have the time to engage in this kind of deep oversight that this bill might ask for. I mean, we're only here three and a half, four and a half months a year, and we're mostly processing bills. Can we really do that? Can we really, even on the rotating basis, do you have a concern that there are time constraints?
Representative Mannion.
Thank you, Chair Pepin and Representative Simon. Yeah, I thought about this. So I went back and looked at what happened in Georgia with the original test case of zero base under then-Governor Carter. And they took 18 weeks to complete their process. And the legislature's involvement in that was really only for about the last half of that. The first half was done entirely by the administration. And I believe that, of course, back then, that was 1972. We didn't have these fancy computers and such and all the good information systems that we have now that provide the information to us in a much more quick fashion than we had back then. If it took 18 weeks then, I kind of think we can do it. I feel like we do. I want to make sure I've understood Representative Simon's question correctly. Is your question just on the time, or is it over the scope? I'm not sure.
Representative Simon.
I'm not sure where you are here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just asked myself the question on both time and scope, and
okay.
I appreciate the staggering that you've done. I think that helps. I just sort of wonder what would our legislative sessions be like. I guess there's no way to know until we're there, if we're there. And I wonder whether between processing all the bills, we would have the time, even in the finance committees, to do the real detailed kind of oversight that this seems to require. I don't know the answer, but
yeah,
Representative Mannion.
Thank you, Chair, Chairwoman, and Representative Simon. I do too. I asked the question in State Government Finance the other day when we were talking with MMB. About the timing of the forecasts, if we couldn't move those up a little bit so that we could make that process a little bit faster. Now, of course, transition of governors is going to be an issue, but the agencies and departments can continue the process even during an election of preparing budgets at the lower levels, bring up that information from people who are career members of a career people in the agencies and staffs, and it doesn't reach the folks who make the policy decisions until after the election is decided in November and December. So I share your concern, and I've wondered if we couldn't move the budget forecast up even just a little bit, because that's going to inform which selections they're going to make as well. So far, I think this bill gets at that, and I think as we move forward, we're going to work out a little bit of those timing issues, but I recognize them as being very real.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Mannion, I think maybe you're only just starting to get frustrated by the lack of information you're going to have about the budget decisions that we make. And it's not because, you know, it's an attempt to mislead or to hide it. It's voluminous. And we make budget decisions basically by target, and we go in by committee and then try to work those things out as best we can, but we don't usually see the ultimate decisions that have to take place about trade-offs between funding some things less or some things more. And maybe zero-based budgeting would be a way to get to it, but my question is, why didn't, you know, the legislature could do this. If you have support from Representative Holberg and your caucus leaders in the House and Senate, the information is all public. It's all available. And why do you need a bill to tell the executive branch to do this instead of having the legislative branch, which you control, just do it?
Representative Mannion.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. And Representative Winkler, it's a good question. I think what we want to do is we want to enable. That's why I emphasize this bottom-up thought about the budgeting process. The legislature can't reach down into an agency and find that mid-level manager that knows how to save $10,000 on a supply budget. That kind of has to work up from the agency. And
And it just uses the idea that, frankly, a lot of the information that we need, in fact, isn't there. But we have, really, in state government, a distributed information system. And there's a lot of information that's really, really local. And what I think this does versus the way we do it currently, Representative, is it allows us to build up that information from the bottom up and empowers the people down at the mid-level to give us the information we need to in order to be more effective in how we budget. So my thought about this is very, very much in terms of where's the best information we can find, and I often think it's not, with no offense to my new job, it's not here in the legislature. It's out there with our agencies and departments.
Madam Chair, I would just make the
observation. Representative Winkler.
That the vast bulk of what we spend isn't spent by state agencies either. It's spent by school districts and hospitals and nursing homes and counties and cities. Mm-hmm. And a zero-based budgeting approach that didn't include starting at, as you said, if you want to do a bottom-up approach, you got to start with school districts because that's where, you know, the single largest share of our money is spent. I think that becomes a challenge. The final question I have is, why not include exemptions from the tax code that are meant to create a certain kind of economic condition? We have, for example, one, this is very small, it's not a lot of money, but we have an exemption on the sales tax for purchasing equipment for ski areas. Now, I don't know what behavior that exemption is intended to incent, but why would we not review tax incentives, tax expenditures, tax exemptions, on the same basis to determine whether or not they're actually achieving the outcome intended?
Representative Banyan.
Oh, I got promoted. thank you, Chairwoman, and Representative Winkler. I like that idea. I like the idea of looking at tax expenditures as well. I'm not a big fan of them. I think we need more transparency. I think we need more in terms of those tax expenditures, because they do get embedded. After a while, as I understood it, I just saw an email last night from Representative Liebling about a bill that she had last time that addressed some of those issues. I think that's a bill that this body might want to consider toward that end.
Maybe we can work together on an amendment.
That would be very interesting. Thank you.
Interesting.
Okay. I don't see any other questions. Representative Banyan, would you like to wrap up, or? You said your piece.
I think I've said my piece, and in the interest of everyone wanting to get to lunch, would ask your support in moving this bill forward.
Okay. No, I think I should give an opportunity if there's anybody in particular that would like to comment on this. I will give an opportunity. We would have a couple minutes left. All right. Seeing no one rushing down, Representative Quam renews his motion that House File 2 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to State Government Finance. Those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
No.
Motion prevails. House File 2 is recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to State Government Finance. Is there any other business anybody has? Meeting adjourned.